Hi, everyone. And here I am again for another Wednesday. I'm going to be reading from A Heroic Life, which is the second Jesus book that I wrote. And I think it's a little bit overlooked. I just finished my fourth book by Jesus, and the second book seems to have been a little bit overlooked by people, but I think it is really valuable. And the chapter I'm going to read today is chapter 3, and it's one of my favorite chapters. I think it says so much in a short space. And so I will try to do justice to it. And I want to start by saying this book, it's called A Heroic Life. And throughout the book, Jesus uses the metaphor of the hero to represent our true self, our best self. And so the idea is that we can each be a hero in our life. We can each be our best self. And so he talks about what it's like to be in the egoic self versus what it's like to be, to live as your heroic self. And so this chapter 3 is about the false assumptions that keep us tied to the egoic self and keep us believing the illusory world of the ego. And previously in this book, it also mentioned that the hero has a certain map that is different, a map that tells him or her how to live. And the ego's map, on the other hand, is the thoughts and the beliefs that run through the mind. And that's a faulty map. And if you have a faulty map, it's not going to get you where you want to go. And so if this when this chapter mentions map, that's what it's referring to. The map is the beliefs that you hold that give you a sense of how to go and where to go. And so with that, I will just start. Chapter 3, False Assumptions. Several insidious assumptions underlie the ego's perspective, which veil the truth about life and cause much of the suffering inherent in the human condition. We are going to examine some of the assumptions that hold the ego's map of reality in place. Hopefully, this will make adopting a truer map much easier. Two small words are responsible for a lot of human suffering: could and should. Let's first take a look at one of these little words that has so much power: could. Of course, you need this word to communicate, and in many instances, it is useful. You could do or say any number of things. Anything really could be possible in the future. And it's useful to see this. It allows you to be open to many possibilities. The problem with could is not in its pointing to future possibilities, but when people use it in speaking about the past. It could have been, and the cause of a great deal of unnecessary regret, sadness, anger, guilt, and shame. So let's examine this. First, I want to back up just a little bit and note that, like all language, it creates a duality and a separation, and it is far from representing the truth about life. So we run into a trap with all language, and that's one of the things that this chapter is pointing out. And I think this could is a really good example that when you're using could to refer to the future, it's useful and it's true. But when you're using could to refer to the past, it's not true and it's not useful. But the mind, or we, don't generally make this distinction. So this is a very important distinction to make, because to not make this distinction leaves us trapped in the illusory world of the ego, where we believe that could is true all the time, in referring to the past as well as the future. And that's the lie. So we have to be really discriminating about language and really question and do some inquiry into the words and the beliefs and the thoughts that we just take for granted because we speak the way we speak and we were taught the way we were taught. And of course, it's useful. Our language is essential for having relationships. We couldn't relate to other people. We couldn't have society without language. But it's so important to understand that it misrepresents reality and that you pay a great cost if you don't see that. And so that's what this chapter is about. Could the past have been different if you or something else had been different? In that previous moment, you could only have been exactly as you were, just as in this moment, you can only be exactly as you are right now. The same is true of every other aspect of that previous moment. It could only have been exactly as it was. A precise set of circumstances, conditioning, and choices, too numerous to comprehend, led up to that moment and made it what it was. Many elements beyond your control or anyone else's would have had to have been different for that moment to have been different. So it isn't just that you could have made a different choice in that moment. All of your conditioning led up to you making that choice, but not just that. Also, everyone else's choices and conditioning that led up to that present moment being as it was led to whatever choice you made in that moment. So we don't make our choices separate from the context in which we live and the environment in which we live. And all of that was determined by other people, not our own choices. And so, in a sense, you could say we don't have that much free will because the conditions that we find ourselves in and our own personal conditioning and everything that led up to a particular moment in time contributes to our behaving in a certain way. And so it's really not true that we could have made a different choice. And so it isn't just a matter of, oh, if only I had chosen. No, it's more complicated than that. It's not that simple. Everything that we do and everything that exists right now is dependent on every single choice that everyone throughout history ever made. So we are so enmeshed in this tapestry of life that we can't single ourselves out and say, oh, well, I could have acted independently of all of that influence. Could the past have been different? That's a useless hypothetical question. What happened in the past was what it was, and no amount of speculation can change that. This rumination about reality is just the mind's way of not accepting a former now, and its way of taking you out of the current now. So, even without this explanation of how your choice couldn't have been different, this thought about the past, that it could have been different, if you take a look at that and inquire into that and ask, is it useful? How does it make me feel? Does it serve me to have that thought? Does it serve me to believe that thought? And this is very important because our thoughts create suffering, and suffering does not serve us. And more importantly, it doesn't serve the whole. It doesn't serve all of humanity for us to be caught in lies that the mind is telling us. And anything that causes us to suffer is a lie. And that's one of the essential truths that is brought forth in these Jesus teachings, that if you are suffering, you must be believing a lie, because the truth doesn't cause you to suffer. could isn't applicable to the past, and it hurts to think about the past this way. The reason it hurts is because that is life's way of telling you that you're believing a lie. Lies hurt. The ego doesn't accept much of what happened in the past any more than it accepts what is happening now. However, the only means the ego has to try to change the past is thoughts. So it thinks about the past. What if? If only. I should have. I wish. But these thoughts are powerless to change the past. All they do is make you miserable. It's funny how we don't necessarily see how powerless and useless our thoughts are. We're programmed to think our thoughts and to believe that they really serve us, that somehow they're making us intelligent and wise and smart and reasonable. But they're really quite the opposite. They cause us to fall into a place of irrationality and unhappiness, and that is the egoic place. The egoic place is actually a place of stress, of the fight and flight side of the brain. And the heroic side of ourselves comes from that prefrontal cortex, the rational, compassionate side that is not involved in these useless thoughts that create so much suffering and emotions. And that is part of the suffering, is that when you believe thoughts like, oh, what if, and I should have, and I wish, and I could have done it differently. When you believe thoughts like that, it creates emotions inside of you that don't feel good. That's the suffering, isn't it? It's the regret, the anger, the sadness, the hurt, all of that. Why? It's so unnecessary. Those emotions are so unnecessary. And that's important to see. We think, oh, having emotions is human, and emotions are good, and I should be feeling this way. Of course, I should be feeling sad or hurt or upset about this because it shouldn't have happened that way. And that is the egoic perspective, and it is the human perspective. But we're more than human, and we're meant to discover that, and we're meant to move beyond that into a place of divine acceptance and love for life and compassion and awe and wonder and gratitude for the life we're given, and openness to learning from our choices. I mean, that's what we're here to do, is learn from our choices. So in that sense, there aren't wrong choices, and things shouldn't have been any different, because we cannot help but learn from our choices. The problem with the ego is this very lack of acceptance. It resists life unless life happens to be showing up in a way that pleases the ego, which does sometimes occur. But mostly, life happens without regard for the ego's preferences. There is life as it is, reality, and life as your ego would like it to be, fantasy. The ego lives in a world of could be, should be, and might be, a world divorced from reality. Well, life is what it is. Anything except what is actually happening now is just a thought about reality, not reality. I think that's a pretty profound statement there. Anything except what is actually happening now is just a thought about reality, not reality. And this is why the emphasis on being in the now. Being in the now is what is real. This moment is the only thing that is real. It's hard for that to sink in, isn't it? And yet, that is the work, is to see that this is it. This moment is it. And anything else is a thought about reality. What was said about could is also true about should. Life should be different. The past should have been different. Who says? The ego does. And if you believe this, you'll suffer. This thought, life should be different, is not a basic truth, but the ego's demand for an ideal world that doesn't exist and never will. This declaration is just a thought in the thought stream, the ego railing against reality. Where does this thought stream come from? Does it speak the truth? Where does the truth about life reside? These are questions you have to answer for yourself. The hero is willing to explore and find out what is really true. If the truth lies in the thought stream, then the thought stream should be trustworthy. But is it? How true is it really? If it is only sometimes true, you have a problem. Then how do you determine what is true and what isn't? What is truth, anyway? Isn't truth something that can actually be known, not something that is simply assumed to be true? When you define truth as what is actually known, then not that much is true. What can be known for certain is generally what is true according to your current sensory experience, without the mind's interpretation or spin. So just imagine that, really, the only thing that we really know for certain is what we are experiencing through our senses right now. Everything else is a concept, a thought, and it may or may not be true. Life is always changing. So even the thought or the belief that my car is parked outside, I have a car and it's parked outside, do you really know that for true? Do you really know that for sure? Not necessarily. If you went out and you saw it, then you would know you have a car parked there. So we make a lot of assumptions, and we need to, of course, in order to navigate life. We need to, so, you know, it's natural. But it's just important, if you want to be free of the lies that cause suffering, it's just important to do some inquiry into these thoughts and to see their limitation. In a particular moment, for instance, it may be true that the sky is blue. But to say much more than that about the sky in that moment is more like a story, a spin given to this simple fact. The thought stream might offer the following: the sky isn't as blue as usual. The sky is bluer in the fall than spring. The sky is prettier when it's bluer. The sky isn't blue often enough. None of the statements that the mind might come up with is absolutely true, and some are just opinions. Statements in the thought stream, such as these, often pass as facts, as the truth. However, the truth is much simpler. The sky is blue, period. As for past events, something either happened or it didn't. There is no could or should about it. Coulds and shoulds relating to a past event can never be true. When should shows up in the thought stream, it indicates a desire for reality to be different than it is. Life shouldn't be so hard. He shouldn't have said that. I should be thinner. The truth is, wanting life to be different has nothing to do with reality and has little influence on it, except that wanting causes discontentment, and then that becomes your experience of reality. Wanting anything other than what is showing up in reality spoils the moment, which is all anyone ever has. If you cling to the ego's ideas about what it wants life to be, rather than accept life as it is, you'll be unhappy. The word should signals a false assumption. So it is an important word in the thought stream to become aware of if you want to be free from suffering and live in reality. There isn't a single statement with that word in it that is true or useful. Just think of that. There isn't a single statement with that word in it that is true or useful. So in noticing your thoughts, if you notice a sentence that has the word should in it, you can just assume it's false and ignore it. Turn your attention away from it. Don't let it create emotions inside of you. Don't sit with it long enough for it to cause you to feel bad. If you want to suffer, then hang on to your shoulds. If you find yourself thinking the thought with should in it, don't believe it. Should is a direct rejection of reality. It's like saying no to what is. No, it should be this way instead. No, he should be this way instead. No, I should be this way instead. Instead of what? Instead of the way it is. Instead of the way he is. Instead of the way I am. Instead of the way things really are. Because the ego wants things to be different, it pretends they can be. But they can't. If an airplane is flying overhead, could that be different? Does saying it should be different change anything? It's too late for that moment to be any different than it is. The now has already moved on, and the airplane is no longer overhead. Could the airplane be overhead now, or should it be? Why bother with such thoughts like these? You can even suffer over airplanes coming and going if you choose to. Believing a could or a should is a choice, and that choice leads to suffering. Once you know this, if you don't want to be unhappy, there's only one choice to make. Suffering is something you can do something about. If you believe the thought stream, you'll be unhappy. And if you don't believe it, you won't be unhappy. When you believe a lie, you will suffer. And when you don't, you won't. Let your suffering be a signal that points you back to the lie that caused it. Learn from your suffering. Learn which thoughts to not take seriously. Notice those thoughts and then return to reality, the present moment. Could and should are both pretenses at control. The ego doesn't like the fact that it has so little control over life. Instead of accepting this, the ego pretends that this isn't true. It pretends that its desires and ideas shape life or should be able to shape life. It believes in could and should. These two little words help create and maintain the ego's illusion of control over life, as do the ego's desires. The ego's desires are the desires expressed in the thought stream. These seem like your desires, but they are actually the desires of your programming, including the desires of your animal nature, such as the desires for comfort, safety, food, and sex. Other deeper desires stem from your true nature. You might put those desires into words at some point, but they don't initially show up in your thought stream. They show up more subtly in your body and are felt or known on a deep level. When these deeper desires are thought about or expressed, they feel right and good, unlike the ego's desires, which generally don't feel good. For instance, the thought, "I want a new car," or "I want a relationship," carries a sense of lack and unhappiness, a need for something. That sense of needing something to be happy doesn't feel good. On the other hand, a deeper desire, such as the longing to expand yourself by studying or creating something, feels exciting, good, and inspiring when you put it into words and think about it. These positive feelings are how you can tell the true desires from the false ones, the true selves from the egos. There is nothing wrong with following the ego's desires. In fact, you're meant to some extent, because that's how you learn about life. It's just that the ego's desires are not what they seem to be. They are not what makes life be the way it is, although they shape life a little. The ego, however, seems to be under the impression that its desires and ideas are what shape life. This false assumption needs examining. The ego puts itself at the center of the universe, and it sees its desires and ideas as central to that universe, when the opposite is true. The ego is not in control, and its ideas, fantasies, and desires mean little in terms of what actually shows up in life. Your ideas and desires, however, are crucial in determining how happy you will be. To the extent that you require life to match them, you will suffer. That's the truth about them. The ego has it backwards. Your ideas and desires are not helping you be a happier and better person. Rather, they are preventing you from that. When you drop your ideas and desires, you drop into the present moment, into reality, and instantly align with your true nature and become all that you ever wanted to be: complete, happy, at peace, content, wise, and loving. You are already what you want to be. But believing that you are the you that desires and struggles to control life keeps you from discovering the truth about yourself. The truth about life is that you don't need the control the ego assumes it needs, because something is in control that is good and wise and has your best interests at heart. Once you stop trying to control life, you discover that everything is already under control and always has been by a benevolent force that has you in its heart, because it is you. You are its reflection in human form and dearly beloved. Just as I, the Son, am a reflection of the Father, so are you. Another false assumption is the thought, I need. Although there are certain basic needs essential to survival, thoughts that begin with I need are false assumptions. The ego believes it needs things to be a certain way to be happy. These are not actual needs, but imagined needs, lies. Life doesn't have to fit your ego's ideas or desires for you to be happy. That is a false assumption. Happiness is always possible, even under very difficult circumstances. The happiness I'm talking about is a deep feeling of contentment with and gratitude for life. When you stop opposing life as it is and start embracing it as the hero does, you fall into life, into the moment, and fall in love with life. Life is good just as it is. It is blessed. It is miraculous. It is a gift just as it is. Being alive and experiencing whatever you're experiencing is a great privilege. Any experience can be gained from, no matter how hard, and most of the wisdom and many of the greatest benefits of living are won as a result of struggles and difficulties. Challenges make you strong in ways that ease cannot. Challenges are necessary to uncover and develop the hero's latent strengths, the strength to persevere, to refrain from indulging in negative emotions and actions, to be patient, to follow a path other than the ego-driven one, to endure, to be calm and peaceful, to refrain from self-doubt and fear, to know what is true and act in accordance with that, to overcome destructive habits, and to resist destructive desires or ones that waste one's energy. People naturally try to avoid pain and challenges, but these are necessary and intrinsic to life and therefore need to be embraced. The hero has learned to embrace challenges and not fall prey to victimization, self-pity, anger, sadness, resistance, overwhelm, hopelessness, or helplessness. The hero also has learned that making mistakes is a natural part of life and cannot be avoided. It is how people evolve. The hero sees this and accepts this. For instance, your will is developed because of the suffering caused by giving in to your weaknesses. You learn to love because of the pain of being unloving, and you learn to be careful because of the difficulties you experienced when you weren't. Through challenges, you learn how to live, and that is what life is about. How to live from a higher place than one's ego and animal instincts. Life is not about getting what the ego wants or thinks it needs. Life is already delivering exactly what you need. What you're getting is what you need. To grow in the ways you need to grow, you need whatever experience you're having. You know what you need by noticing what is in your life now. For instance, if you're struggling in your relationship, then that is your current curriculum. The lesson might be any number of things: to accept and allow, to not accept abuse, to not judge, to trust, to compromise, to overcome anger and selfishness, to be patient, or to love, which entails all of the other lessons. If your struggles are around supporting yourself, then that is your current curriculum. You're being asked to learn about making money, as well as cultivate the inner resources to cope with a lack of it. It's also a time for discovering what you love doing and what really matters to you. It's your chance to develop your talents and uncover ones you never knew you had. Because only by doing so will you find meaningful and satisfying work that will support you. If you're struggling with health issues, then that may be a wake-up call. Is there something you need to change about how you're living your life, your diet or other habits, your attitude, your lifestyle, your relationships, your job? Perhaps nothing has to be done except to accept and be willing to live with the limitations your health is providing. The lesson may be one of the deepest spiritual lessons of all: surrender to what is. Once you have that one mastered, you become a master, a hero. Life, including your life, is as it is meant to be, and wisdom is knowing this. Once you see this about life, you can relax into whatever experience you're having, make the most of it, and enjoy it for what it is, and not be unhappy about what it is not. You have what you need because life is always providing exactly what you need for your growth and otherwise. You may think you need to be healthy when you're not, or thin when you're not, or rich when you're not, or something else that you currently are not. But you are playing exactly the role or roles you came here to play in this drama of life and learning from them. Many of those roles change throughout life, which is another avenue of learning. Those who are poor may become rich, and those who are rich may become poor. Those who are healthy become sick, and those who are sick may become healthy. Those who are unsuccessful may become successful, and those who are successful may become unsuccessful. Everyone is playing the role or roles they are meant to play for the time being. Everyone is here to teach others, and everyone is here to learn. The beautiful person teaches you to overcome your jealousy, and he or she learns about the limits of beauty. The poor teach you compassion, and they learn inner strength. The rich teach you about your own greed and desires, and they learn about the same. The sick teach you to serve and remind you of your vulnerability, and they learn to receive. The disabled teach you gratitude, and they learn about limitation. Criminals show you how hurtful people can become when the ego is in control, and they learn the depth of suffering that is possible. Athletes teach you perseverance and endurance, and they learn the same. The victim teaches you to not be a victim, and he or she learns the same. Those who abuse their power teach you not to give away your power, and they learn the emptiness and pain of power executed without love. How quickly you learn these things is up to you, But everyone eventually learns, either in this lifetime or in another. Another way others are your teachers is by triggering your negative emotions and judgments, which you need to take responsibility for and master. The beautiful woman didn't cause your jealousy. Your desires caused it. The homeless person didn't cause your repulsion. Your fear of being on the street did. The bad driver didn't cause your anger. Your expectation that he or she should drive differently did. Your spouse didn't cause your hurt. Your need for your spouse's approval did. For example, if you find yourself rejecting someone who is poor, you need to look at your fear of poverty and any judgments you have about those who are poor. Judgments and blame are how you avoid looking at your own fear of poverty and facing your own vulnerability. Once you do, compassion and love can then flow. Otherwise, love can't flow to others. You can transmute any negative emotion or judgment into love by seeing that there is nothing to reject outside yourself. I want to repeat that because I think that's an especially powerful statement. You can transmute any negative emotion or judgment into love by seeing that there is nothing to reject outside yourself. Wow, there is nothing to reject outside yourself. Anything you are rejecting or judging about someone else is about you, not the other person. You created the repulsion, judgment, or negative emotion because you rejected something within yourself, something inherent in every human being. The greed you judge the rich for is in you too. The overindulgence you judge the heavy person for is in you too. The selfishness you judge your partner for is in you too. The superficiality you judge the beauty queen for is in you too. The laziness you judge the unemployed for is in you too. Every human is endowed with the same flaws and the same virtues. Wow, I want to repeat that again too, because it's such a leveling of the field, isn't it? Every human is endowed with the same flaws and the same virtues. We're the same. When you can accept that what you're judging or rejecting in someone else is also within you, then you won't put others out of your heart for that. Have compassion for your own humanity, and you will be able to have compassion and love for everyone else. And that's so important. We really can't have compassion for others and forgiveness unless we are able to have compassion and forgiveness for ourselves. It all starts within ourselves, with doing our own work within ourselves to have compassion for how difficult it is to be a human being. It's painful to not love. Look inside and see how you prevent yourself from loving certain people, and that will free you to love, including to love yourself. If you don't love others, it's nearly impossible to love yourself, because not loving makes you feel small and bad about yourself. Love, on the other hand, is proof of your greatness, your true nature, which is pure goodness. So you see, life doesn't need to be any different than it is. It is already being orchestrated perfectly, designed exquisitely for your growth and everyone else's. It was not designed to fit your desires and imagination, but God's. So let go and let God, as they so wisely say. This brings us to the deepest truth, which is that there is no such thing as beautiful or ugly, successful or unsuccessful, intelligent or unintelligent, rich or poor, sick or well, or any other duality or descriptor you can think of. Although these words are necessary for communication, they don't point to anything real. They are mental constructs often utilized by the ego to support its black and white perspective, which categorizes everything and everyone as either good or bad. The ego paints in very broad brush strokes. In truth, there is no good or bad, only what is. The hero loves what is, while the ego loves only what it deems to be good and rejects or avoids the rest. Boy, that's a lot to reject, isn't it? No wonder there's so much unhappiness, because what the ego likes is really a pretty narrow range of things. But everything is needed to make this world go around. Everything and everyone is equally valuable, or the world wouldn't serve the hero's growth as beautifully as it does. Life is good, all of it. It is all as it is meant to be. Being happy requires accepting and loving all of it. To the extent that you don't, you will be unhappy. Notice how it feels in your body when you reject something. It doesn't feel good. Now notice how it feels when you accept and love something. It feels good. That is your power. If you want to feel good, you can. All you have to do is accept and love whatever is, rather than reject it. Love reality just as it is. This is a choice. And I just want to add here, it doesn't always feel like a choice when you're not aware enough of the thoughts that are going through your head. If you're automatically identified with them, then you're not really having a choice. Then the ego is choosing how you are in the world. So you do have to gain a certain amount of distance and detachment from the thoughts in your head to be able to step back and have a choice about whether you're going to go down that road that thought is taking you down or not. Because we don't really have a choice about whether a thought arises in our mind. They just pop into our mind. We can't do anything about that. But once they pop into our mind, if we can train ourselves to become aware of the thoughts in our mind, which is what meditation does, without jumping on the bandwagon, jumping on that train of thought, then we can stop a moment and say, oh, look at that. And we can make another choice to not go down that road. That road is the path of least resistance. So it takes a lot of practice to turn things around and not go down that road and make another choice, and instead turn your attention to the present moment, to your bodily, sensory, and more subtle senses experience of the here and now. The hero embraces life just as it is because he realizes that there is no point in doing otherwise. Opposing what is doesn't change a thing except one's degree of happiness. The hero has observed reality and noticed the truth. Wanting things to be different than they are right now, or wanting the past to be different than it was, is fruitless and only causes unhappiness. For the hero, there is really no other choice but to love what is. Now we come to the biggest false assumption of them all. Whatever comes after the words, I am. Whatever you say after those two words can only be a very small description of yourself, if it is true at all. If only the words that usually follow I am were just descriptions and not negative stories, as they so often are, it wouldn't be so bad. I'm too old to learn something new. I'm a failure at relationships. I'm not good enough at anything. I'm never going to be able to forgive him. Who is this I? Is anything you can say about it true throughout time? That would be the test of a statement's veracity, wouldn't it? But there are few things that would pass that test. This I is very elusive, an illusion actually. You can't find it and you can't tell the truth about it because it isn't real and doesn't exist. How can you accurately describe something that is an illusion except to say that it is an illusion? The narrative about you that goes on in your head has no substance and therefore no truth. You could disregard your thoughts about I and you wouldn't miss a thing except the suffering they generally produce. And remember, if a thought causes suffering, it is a lie. Suffering is how life points you away from the mind's lies. So this sentence, you could disregard your thoughts about I and you wouldn't miss a thing except the suffering they generally produce. So when you really get that, you are free. It's a hard one to get free of, but this is really true. You could disregard your thoughts about I and you wouldn't miss a thing. This is what awakening and enlightenment is about. Those who are awakened or enlightened do disregard the thoughts that have I in them. They don't identify with them. They don't believe them. They don't believe that they refer to who they really are. And of course they don't. Those thoughts refer to the false self. If you look at the thought stream, you will discover that much of your suffering comes from your I thoughts, from believing this I is who you are. I am, fill in the blank, creates the false self and is largely responsible for maintaining it. If you stopped believing that this I is who you are, the false self would collapse and the true self would be all that remained. So this is an important point also, that we don't recognize the true self because the false self is what is prominent, is what we're giving our attention to. If we stop giving our attention to the false self, that is to the I thoughts, then what's left is the true self. And the true self is a subtle experience that does not involve thought. Thought is what blocks or overshadows the experience of the true self, especially the thoughts about I. So once you aren't attending to your thoughts about I and the thought stream in general, and you move into the present moment, and you're just here and now in your body and senses, present to what is real and true and not your thoughts, then you are experiencing the truth about who you are, the beingness that you are, the simple existence and presence and beingness that you are, that is experiencing your life in this moment. That's who you are. It's not really esoteric or complicated. It's actually so simple that it's overlooked. The true self, the experience of the true self is the most ordinary, simple thing that it's overlooked. It's not some mysterious, difficult to find thing. It's what has been living your life. It's what is listening, seeing, experiencing everything that it's experiencing. Is it so hard to believe that something else is living your life besides this I? It's watching the whole play of this person who believes himself or herself to be the character instead of the observer and knower of the character. What is it that can see that you are playing a character? It's actually pretty obvious, isn't it, that you are play acting. TV, movies, and other stories give you practice observing characters playing out their roles. You know this is true of you as well. You're playing a character. And yet you know you're playing a character, right? What knows this? What sees this? What hears this? What experiences? Is that the character or something else? If it is the character, then you wouldn't be able to be aware of the character you're playing. However, you can describe this character pretty well, and you often do. It is what is described in your thought stream. So I think that is a very important point. Is there something here that is listening to this truth about life and is listening to this talk about the character and understands what these words are referring to? That is who you are. The character doesn't understand. The character doesn't even think. But the character isn't who you really are, and that's really good news, because the character has flaws and an ego, which isn't very pretty sometimes. It's a good thing that who you really are is the hero, and all the hero's qualities, strength, wisdom, contentment, compassion, insight, love, and courage. In any moment, you can access those qualities because they are always there. The more you access them, the stronger they become, and the more those qualities become part of the character you're playing. The happy ending to the story of you is that your character becomes a hero. You are meant to become your true self, but even then you will still be a human being with a role to play, and the traits and tendencies of the character you're playing, except that the character will be infused with love, peace, joy, wisdom, courage, and every other good quality you can imagine. I'm going to repeat that paragraph just so it's a little clearer. And I think it's a fairly deep thought too. So I know that when I wrote it, I had to stop and think about it. You are meant to become your true self, but even then, you will still be a human being with a role to play and the traits and tendencies of the character you're playing, except that the character will be infused with love, peace, joy, wisdom, courage, and every other good quality you can imagine. Those are the qualities of your true self, of the hero. So in this paragraph, this is essentially what my book, In the World But Not of It, is about. It's about becoming the divine human. It's about the integration of the divine self into the human character that we came here to be. So we're meant to play this character in the world. And our ego can be what is driving this character and making the choices and creating the dramas and having those experiences. Or the divine self can be what is driving the character and having those experiences. And those will be much better, happier, creative, productive, fulfilling experiences. So when the ego is what is running the show, there's suffering, limitation, negative emotions, pain and suffering caused to others, conflict, inner and outer disharmony, unhappiness, discontentment. That's the human condition. The human condition is the condition of being run by the ego. But we're here to move beyond the human condition and to discover that we are more than the ego, that we are the divine self that has come here to incarnate as this character and to be the loving, peaceful, harmonious, happy, fulfilled, unlimited character that we can be. Of course, we'll be limited to some extent by whatever conditioning or programming we came in as the character. You know, for instance, I'm a female, so, you know, I can't have experiences as a male, right? So the character does have some limitations. It shapes our experience. But the divine self can cause that character to have the most fulfilling, the most loving, the most unlimited experience possible for that character. So that's what we're here to unfold. And it's a process. It doesn't happen overnight. Learning about the truth is a really big part of the process, but ultimately everyone has to make a choice moment to moment to stay here now and not get lost in the thought stream, in the imaginary reality and dramas and feelings of the ego. And so that is how I will conclude this reading from A Heroic Life. The subtitle of that book is New Teachings from Jesus on the Human Journey. And for those who maybe don't realize that, this book was channeled by me, given to me from Jesus. And so it is Jesus' voice that I've been reading to you in my own voice as best as I can. All right then, so I am going to bid you all adieu and we'll gather again next week. Thank you for being here. Bye-bye.